You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Well, let's go straight out to the HRMP guest line. Don't want to keep Mike Silver waiting. Mike Silver, formerly of NFL.com, NFL Network, now a contributor to Bally Sports, had this story a couple of days ago. Texans chairman Cal McNair at his golf tournament a couple of months ago using anti-Asian slurs at this team event. Mike, what was the feeling that you got from the people that were there? What was the reaction from those that heard the chairman and CEO of the Texans make these remarks?
The people I talked to were pretty upset, and you know, I know there's been a lot of blowback of people saying that's not a slur. They tend to be non-Asian Americans who have decided that, but you know, I think people have pretty much come to terms with the fact that that's a gratuitous way of framing a horrible pandemic that seems to point blame at a certain culture, and while it may be a country, China, there has been, unfortunately, blowback in terms of hate crime in the United States against Asian Americans. So, you know, I think people thought it was gratuitous and that the delivery was a little bit of a, ha-ha, I'm saying this. And, you know, Mr. McNair, in his statement to us before we ran the story, did apologize and say that he meant it as a joke. So, hopefully it's over and can move forward in a more sensitive way.
Mike, big picture, and appreciate you joining us, by the way. Big picture on this in terms of just overall with the league, the Washington football team, the emails, the fact that, you know, the commissioner wants to sit on that, say that, you know, everything is already, the punishment's already been laid out, that, you know, the organization and the owner, Dan Snyder, have already, you know, paid their dues to whatever the damage that they did, and it doesn't need to go any further. Then you've got these comments by Cal, and yet you look at it from a league perspective going, I mean, at a certain point, it almost seems like, you know, Roger Goodell is wanting to sweep it all under the rug and say, I can play God here, and if I say it's over, it's over. But there's a ton of people, including some political people, that say it's not, and these are the exact reasons why things like this need to be investigated further, and the league needs to be more transparent.
Well, you know, I think from a consumer standpoint, you know, you look at it and say, okay, well, the league, you know, draped itself in anti-racist rhetoric after the, you know, George Floyd murder and the civil unrest that followed. And, you know, some really good things happened, by the way, in the wake of that in NFL circles. I think some really stark, good conversations were had. Intra-team conversations. I think a lot of white players have told me that, you know, I knew it was a thing, but I finally started to feel it in a different way after hearing many of my black teammates tell me some of their experiences. So there was a lot of good, but there was also a lot of branding symbolism where you had end racism in the end zones, you had messages on the helmet, you had the playing of the black national anthem before games. And so the NFL certainly went to great lengths to say we stand against any sort of bigotry or racism, as they should. But, you know, then you have Woody Johnson, the owner of the Jets, was investigated by the State Department when he was the ambassador to the UK for some alleged racist and sexist comments, among other things. There was no public league investigation about that. You know, the league told me that they're declining comment on Mr. McNair's statement that I reported. You know, I would assume they'll follow up in some capacity, but no announced investigation. And you mentioned Daniel Snyder and that organization. You know, look, I think consumers say, first of all, collateral damage in the Washington football team investigation with some pretty serious, you know, findings of toxic workplace culture and sexual harassment and other things. So far, the only person to lose their job is John Gruden as collateral damage as the coach of the Las Vegas Raiders, who obviously, you know, put some things in emails that are unconscionable. But meanwhile, the Washington report was a verbal one, and we've seen the league, you know, with deflated balls and other things, issue these very, very public, detailed reports, and then in this case, it was just a verbal report. Nobody got to see it. Nobody's seeing the emails. And so, at the very least, if you're a consumer, you're saying owners are being held to a much different standard than coaches or players. And so I think that's why it's frustrating for a lot of consumers, and now apparently for Congress.
Can I just follow up real quick, Mike, on that and say you get two sides of the story, even to get back to your reporting on Cal. Some people say it's no big deal, shouldn't even be a story, should stop talking about it. Other people, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's a good sector of the population in Houston that think that there's been a lot of incompetency with Cal, that said, this is our Donald Sterling moment. This is where we can finally get rid of Cal and all of his shortcomings as an owner. Where do you sit on where if there should be any punishment at all for what he said?
Okay, well, first of all, we could spend many segments talking about the dumpster fire that is the Texans organization.
We're here for it.
Yeah, you know, and I certainly haven't been shy about sharing my feelings about Jack Easterby and many other things. So, yeah, I can understand why fans are really frustrated. And remember, this was like the most media-friendly organization for years. I mean, it was a point of pride in that building that, you know, they – access was good. The relationship with local and national media was good. It seemed very upfront. And obviously, Cal's father, the late Bob McNair, had some rough edges. And, you know, one of them came out shortly before his passing when he made the infamous inmates were in the prison comment. And, you know, which doesn't help in this case, you know, doesn't help the perception. Should there be an investigation? I mean, I just think if you're going to be a league that stands against racism publicly, for its own purposes, certainly. And, you know, by the way, you should be a league that stands against racism, given how diverse our populace is in this world, you know, the NFL world. You know, you should definitely try to investigate and legislate against any perceived bigotry. And, you know, I'll take Cal's statement at his word that he didn't mean to offend, which that would be good if he didn't. You know, I'm told there were gaffes when he said it, and that it seemed to be very clear to the people there what was going on. But you know, hopefully he can learn from this. But yeah, you know, I think the league should be very vigilant. But when people say Roger Goodell needs to do something, well, Roger Goodell technically works for Cal and the other 31 teams. So, you know, Roger Goodell's getting paid a lot of money to take those figurative, to take that figurative pounding for them. Now, that didn't stop Adam Silver, like a week onto the job, for getting up in front of America and saying, I am banning Donald Sterling for life. And whether he had the actual authority to do that, I don't think he cared. I think he was making a very, very strong statement about what kind of league he was going to run and what kind of values the NBA stands for. I doubt anything like that would happen in this case, but you know, if you're a Texans fan, you have every right to add this to the long list of what's gone on in the last couple of years and say, what the heck is going on with this franchise?
Mike Silver joining us on the HRMP guest line. Well, I can't let you say what you said about Easterby and not ask for at least an elevator speech on what he has meant to the Texans organization.
I mean, look, I don't even know what to say. I mean, you know, apparently he has convinced Cal McNair that he is an indispensable part of his organization. And what does he actually do? The things that I've heard that he's actually done have not been good. You know, he's either the worst stand-up comedian in the history of YouTube videos, or I actually think that those things are appropriate to say in a public context when he's trying to, you know, ham-handedly draw a distinction between different ethnic groups and different cultures. I think you guys know what videos I'm talking about. And if you haven't, fans out there, be sure to Google. It's awesome. It's great entertainment. He'll be here all night. So, you know, listen, I think that he's been a divisive force in that building. I don't know any good things that he's done. I think he's done a lot of bad things, and it's a less attractive job. You know, Brandon Staley talked to Nick Caserio, who he goes back with and has a lot of respect for, and wanted to ask some questions about that job. But I don't think Brandon Staley or that caliber of a coach with other options would have wanted to walk into that cesspool. And if you're trying to get your house in order, I just don't understand how you don't start with that guy. And it's not like, hey, look, Al Davis was a handful, you know, but he also, like, helped invent the modern game of football and was a football genius. So, I disagreed with Al Davis, like, 99 times out of 100 and thought he did some brutal things to that franchise. But I understood why people would put up with it because he really, really knew football. Why you would put up with those things from somebody who, I don't even know what his qualifications would be to be in that position. I don't get it.
Mike, how do they right the ship? How do they get the culture back? How do they get the fan base back? Because a lot of people said, look, I'm jumping off the bandwagon. I'm done until Bill O'Brien leaves. But now because of that guy, Jack Easterby, and the fact that, look, fans aren't stupid. They know that every time Bill O'Brien opened his mouth, me and Jack did this, me and Jack did that. And now it almost seems like, and I've mentioned this multiple times, when you pay a search firm to go get you general manager candidates, and none of them were named Nick Caserio, and that right. Jack Easterby realized the only way I save my ass and save my job is I get a guy that might actually know who I am to keep me around, and he went and he got him. So now it's almost like Caserio owes him one too. How did the Texans dig out of this hole, and would it take getting rid of Easterby to at least get him in the right direction?
Well, let me give you a long answer and a short answer. The long answer is they not only didn't follow the search firm's candidates and go off the board and overpay or double pay, they pulled the rug out reportedly from a minority candidate that they were getting ready to, that thought he was getting an offer or maybe did get an offer. That's not awesome. Yeah, you're right. He seems to be very interested in consolidating power by any means necessary. The short answer is three words. Fire Jack Easterby.
Boy, would that be great.
I think the city of Houston loves those three words. Mike, thanks so much for hopping on. Great stuff. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, you guys. Appreciate it.
It's Mike Silver's been covering the NFL for decades. That piece on Cal McNair on Bally Sports. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, Houston, what's your stance on Jose Siri? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
And swinging a weak ground ball past the mound. It'll go out to Albies at second. Throw to first. Not in time. Siri beats it out. Tucker in to score. Gurriel up to second. All kinds of emotion from Siri. Give him an RBI on the infield hit, and the Astros have a 2-1 lead. And the 1-1, a slider pulled through the hole into left field, a base hit. Gurriel around third, he'll come in to score. Siri to third, the throw gets away to the backstop. Siri will score! Maldonado to second. And it is 4-1 Houston.
Jose Siri's involvement in the game yesterday, all that involvement came in the second inning. Siri 1-for-4 in the game, had that little excuse me infield single that drove the run in. Did have a heads-up play. Martin Maldonado, that ground ball through the left side of the infield, got into left field. There was going to be a play at the plate. It looked like no one was covering the bag at third. Siri realized that, was able to take the extra base. Ball got away. Siri scored. That was great. Next three times up to plate, it's the full Jose Siri experience yesterday at Minute Maid Park. The next three times he went up to the plate, he struck out each and every time with some terrible at-bats, swinging at 55-foot breaking balls. Looked awful in the other three at-bats. And I kind of get the feeling like the city is divisive on Jose Siri. Half the city, they love the drip. They love the swag. They love that 100 emoji chain that he wears around his neck. Brings energy and excitement to this team. And then you have the other half of the city that wouldn't mind if they never saw Jose Siri take another at-bat for the Astros ever again.
Well, and I think that you can also see it with the national media, where now all of a sudden Joe Buck and John Smoltz are talking about, because Dusty has kind of talked to them about, this guy's got all the tools. This guy might be the most tool-talented player that the Astros have, because going forward, he can throw, he can run, he's got this, he's got that. Look, I'm here for all the drip. I'm here for all the enthusiasm, because we just got done talking about where it's been lacking. You don't have George Springer on this team anymore, which was the straw that stirred the drink, which was the igniter that got every fire going for the Astros in the locker room, in the clubhouse, in the dugout, on the field. He was that guy, and Bregman added to it. Springer's gone, and that Bregman ain't coming back this year. So the fact that Siri can do everything that Siri's needed to do while sitting there at the front step of the dugout, I'm fine with. That's why when people came at me last night, I said, miss me with the fact that now that he did what that little highlight described, that you suddenly think that that was the absolute right move to make with Siri. I saw what you saw. I saw the other at-bats. I saw flailing at pitches. I saw him not having a concept of a zone, to where on 3-2, a pitch that had no business being close to the zone was flailed at, swung and missed, and for one of those strikeouts. And I'm going, he's also really flippant in center field.
Yeah, he's an adventure in center field. He takes some interesting angles. He had the at-bat in the Red Sox series where he struck out, go figure. And he looked at the Red Sox pitcher and, like, tipped his cap, kind of like, you got me there. That was a good one. 713-780-3776. Houston, how do you feel about Jose Siri? 713-780-ESPN. You know who loves him? Dusty Baker loves himself some Jose Siri.
Hell, big time. I mean, speed. I remember Willie McGee and the Cardinals, they used to always talk about speed kills. And speed makes you do things that you wouldn't normally do, makes you rush. It puts pressure on the opposition, where you have to catch it cleanly and throw it and have somebody catch it cleanly on the other side. And, you know, that was some exciting stuff that Siri did. And I always tell him, he reminds me of Cesar Cedeno. I mean, the fact that he can appear out and then some kind of way be safe. And I mean, you got to calculate it, but you got to be daring, and you can't be afraid of making mistakes.
Cesar Cedeno is one of the greatest players in this franchise's history. He's been top 25 in MVP voting 5 different times. And look, I don't think that Dusty Baker there is comparing Jose Siri so much to Cesar Cedeno. He's talking more about how he is on the base paths. But be careful whenever you start throwing Jose Siri into that Cesar Cedeno conversation, one of the greatest players in franchise history.
Yeah, look, I look at it and say, look, I don't think you have to draw the line in the sand and say either you love him or you never want to see him on the Astros roster again after this year. I think there's a future for him, because there's a reason why they didn't trade him when they traded other top minor leaguer outfielders in their system and did some things to shuffle some guys around. But I don't think that he's the end-all, be-all that's going to be the next starting center fielder for the Astros starting next year, and it's going to live up to the billing that a lot of people are trying to give him about, he's got pop, he can hit for average, he's got wheels, he's a great defensive outfielder. He had a good September into October, right? He had 4 home runs. He did some things that made you kind of open your eyes and go, okay, there's potential for the future. But potential for the future and becoming the next starting center fielder for the Houston Astros as soon as next season are like night and day, that you shouldn't be on that kind of bandwagon. And I think you said it right from the time that we started talking about this when Jake Meyers went out. Look, Jake Meyers is your starting center fielder for the Astros next year, and he's going to be your everyday center fielder. But I think until then, you're going to see Chaz, and you're going to see, based on the pitching matchups, you're going to see Siri. But as I said, and I don't change my opinion at all, I think Chaz should be the starting center fielder for every game the rest of this series. What Siri did last night, was it beneficial? Yes. Was his speed big? Yes. But do I think that Chaz could have done similar things? Yes. And do I think that Siri solidified his position as being the guy that has to be in center field now? No. Because I saw every other at bat, and I saw the one that he did get. People forget, it was a dribbler. He beat it out, but it wasn't like he stuck 100 mile an hour off the bat line drive towards the second baseman. It was a dribbler. Tell me where he did something other than run around the bases wildly, but obviously savvy in the way he scored. And I'll hear your argument, but I don't see all that much.
Let's give one more from Dusty Baker on his center fielder Jose Siri.
You can run into mistakes, but you can also create mistakes. And You know, he played a good game. You know, we still want him to, you know, as soon as he finds a way to make more contact, he'll be even better. You know, that's his only downfall right now, but he's young. I mean, we got this guy off the waiver wire, and he was in the minor leagues. And so it's a long ways from waiver wire and AAA to, you know, to the World Series, and he's handled it pretty well.
It's a small miracle that Jose Siri's starting for a team that's playing in the World Series, to be quite honest with you. You have guys like Smoltz and Buck saying that Jose Siri can do everything on the baseball field, and that Dusty Baker says he has more talent than anybody else on his team. Let's pump the brakes. Let's give you a little harsh reality check on who Jose Siri is. He's not young. He's currently 26 years old. He'd be a 27-year-old rookie next year. You know how many organizations this guy has been in his big league career? Four different organizations. Dudes don't go through four different organizations before they're ever a rookie in Major League Baseball if they're this hot prospect and a dude with a ton of tools. And then if you look at his minor league numbers, not very good. 271 career minor league hitter, 2,500 minor league at-bats. So he wasn't exactly fast rising through the minors. And of those 2,500 at-bats in the minor leagues, 800 of them were strikeouts. Look, Jose Siri's got the energy. That's great. Like, he's Lima time that plays center field. That's awesome. You like to see the energy in the dugout. That's great. You like to see the hustle and the speed on the bases. Use him as a pinch runner. That's awesome. But you stop talking about him in the same likes of Willie McGee and Cesar Cedeno and saying that he can do everything on the field and that he's this hotshot young prospect. Look, I like Siri. I like the drip. I like the energy. He's nothing more than a fourth or fifth outfielder on a Major League Baseball team.
Well, I think he should start next year, Jeremy. I think he should start.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do.
You just talked about Skeeters.
Think he could start for the Sugarland Skeeters and you could develop along and let him sit, you know, let him be in an organization now that thinks highly of him where he can continue to develop. But he has a lot of developing to do. And so I think that it's just like we talk about when teams don't have the book on you and you get called up, a lot of times you're going to see pitches that once they do start getting some tape on you, you're not going to see anymore. But he capitalized, and he had a good September, and it turned into a roster spot that's turned into the opportunity of a lifetime for him to resurrect his career. But when I start talking about the Astros going forward for next season and the future isn't now for Jose Siri. That's why I'm saying there has to be a common ground between get rid of him or he's going to start for you in center field and be everything that, you know, you've just talked about. I think that there's a common ground. You know, continue to develop him. They like him. He's a likable guy. He does a lot of intangible things that are very, very inviting to his teammates and to the people around him. So continue to see what you can get for him. But don't be so brainwashed by a small sample size, Houston, from other cases that you've already been through in life, like Brock Osweiler and others, to think that suddenly this is a guy that's going to start for you in the outfield for the Astros next season.
And do not ignore in victory what you wouldn't in defeat. And look, I'm not even saying don't start Jose Siri against lefties. That's been what Dusty Baker has done through these playoffs for the most part once Jake Myers went down. If that's what you're going to do, that's what you're going to do. Just don't talk about how he's this hotshot prospect and has all this talent. He's been waived by different organizations around Major League Baseball, will be a 27-year-old rookie next year, and has struck out almost a third of his bats in the minors is a 271 hitter. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776 if you want to weigh in. We'll get to your responses when we return. Also, we'll take a trip around the NFL. Big game Thursday night football tonight. Packers at Arizona. Both teams missing some critical pieces. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Pretty split on Siri Love versus non-Siri Love. I think most people are pretty realistic in the fact that, look, Siri's an energy guy, and we all love him for the energy guy that he is. If Jake Myers is on this team, you probably don't see at-bats for Jose Siri. Chaz McCormick. Look, McCormick's not had a great... He got off to a decent start in the ALDS in the White Sox series and then kind of faded a little bit down the stretch in that series and then was not good in the Boston series and was only didn't have a hit in his only start so far in the World Series. The Astros just don't really have a great option at center field currently. good news, maybe, if you can be, maybe if you put on your Astros colored glasses, you can look at this as good news. Astros are going to Atlanta, right? Yeah. You're not going to have the DH.
Right.
They haven't made it official, but it seems like Jordan Alvarez is going to play left field every game. He has to. His bat's too hot. Michael Brantley swinging a hot bat. He's crushing lefties, too, by the way. So that notion that I had of maybe you sit Brantley against lefties in the postseason, he's making me look like a fool for that. So he has to be in the starting lineup. He's your right fielder. You can't take Tucker out of the lineup, so he's your center fielder. I would be shocked if either Chaz McCormick or Jose Siri get a start in center field in games 3 through 5 in Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's much ado about nothing, really, because the bigger issue, as you and I talked about, is exactly what they're going to do defensively in the National League Park. I mean, because I don't feel comfortable with Kyle Tucker in center field. And nothing's going to change my attitude towards that, because as much as he can bring offensively, defense matters. And as you've eloquently put in the past, look, your middle defense is vital when you're talking about whoever's on the mound and trying to cut down on runs and stay in ball games or have your best chance to win. I don't give Kyle Tucker for his arm or his ticker because of the fact that nothing gets his blood rate, his blood flowing and his blood pressure up to go chase a ball and get really intent on trying to cut a ball off in the gap or those kind of things. So that's why I said a lot of it's going to be determined by are you struggling offensively? And you got to put your best offensive lineup out there no matter what it means defensively.
I think they do that.
I do too. Yeah, I absolutely do. Yeah. I think that if you were really struggling defensively or there were some big slip-ups that were noticeable, that were glaring things and cost you a game or became something that people were pointing fingers at, then you might address it a little differently. But for now, I believe when they go to the National League Park, it's going to be all offense all the time. And the three outfielders, depending on what combination you use and where you put them, are going to be Tucker, Brantley, and Jordan, because you can't afford, especially with Bregman struggling, especially with some of the guys scuffling, Correa scuffling, you can't afford to take either Brantley and or Jordan out of the lineup, especially with Brantley hitting lefties.
Yeah, Brantley's been hitting lefties really well, so that's going to be your outfield. I mean, I'd be shocked if it's not. So you probably won't have to worry about Siri swinging at 55-foot breaking balls and Chaz McCormick striking out left and right in the games in Atlanta. Thursday night football tonight. Great game. Green Bay, Arizona. I'm a fool with this one, too. I like to get in on the early lines, and I actually played the Green Bay money line when it first came out because I thought Green Bay was going to win the game. And then I find out, like, hours later that Devontae Adams is going to miss the game, or at least he had COVID, and he was going to be a long shot to play Thursday night. It has now been reported that he is officially out for tonight's game. So no Devontae Adams. The spread now is... Green Bay is getting 7 points, and I have a stupid Green Bay money line. The total's 51 as of right now at mybookie.ag. A couple of players will be out, some big names for both teams. Just mentioned Devontae Adams is out, couldn't get the COVID test in time in that 24-hour window, so he will not be in action tonight. J.J. Watt will not be in action for Arizona, and also looks like he's going to miss the remainder of the regular season, the remainder of the season, period. Ian Rappaport saying earlier that J.J. Watt actually tore his labrum, his bicep, and his rotator cuff, and dislocated his shoulder. Watt played 3 more plays with that banged-up shoulder. He hurt it chasing the mobile Davis Mills out of the pocket, too, by the way. So that's a huge loss. I mean, it's a huge loss for Arizona tonight. It's a huge loss for Green Bay tonight. But a bigger loss for Arizona in the fact that one of their long-term better defensive players is done for the year.
I wonder if that's the one that he always wears the brace on, because he's always had issues with it.
I don't know.
You know, because even after he had it repaired, remember, he had issues with it to where he every game he wears that brace from the rotator past the elbow. It's curious to me. It's unfortunate for JJ. He was off to a pretty good start to the season when we talked to Howard Balzer, talking about the fact that he still drew enough attention away from Chandler Jones and other guys on the defense that he was impactful for Arizona. He's had some good games. I told you I watched him play where he knocked a few passes down before they played the Texans. And to have it be one thing to be an injury, another thing to be season ending for a guy that was really looking like, you know, not that he was fully resurrecting where he used to be, but he was impactful again. It's a shame. As it relates to tonight's game, you know, I think that the bigger issue is the Packers wide receiver situation. It's unfortunate, and I feel for you having got, you know, jumped on this game early in the week. I could have seen where you were coming from. But knowing what I know and just what I told you about the fact they're going to have to run the football, when they're not running it, Aaron Jones out of the backfield is going to have to be a highly utilized weapon. The tight ends, God forbid, Randall Cobb's going to have to get a lot of action. They're forcing Valdez Scantling back. At least they hope to have him, who's been dealing with a hamstring issue. Who knows what he's going to give you. And it's a really good Cardinals defense to complement an even more talented Cardinals offense. And from a Packers perspective, they're still missing five key members of their defense that are not just guys that are plug-and-play guys. These are impactful guys on the defense. That's why the Cardinals, I feel like, are going to win this game and probably pretty easily.
Yeah, what a big loss. You look at the numbers, and like statistically they don't jump out at you, but I think he's one of the best in the league at getting to the quarterback pressures and hurries, things like that. Aaron Rodgers speaking to the media earlier this week, talking about how this game's going to have that big game feel on Thursday night.
We're playing a great football team. They're 7-0. They've got a lot of confidence. This has those playoff-type implication games, even though it is just week 8. We're aware of that. A lot of times when you're not playing a division opponent, it comes down to tiebreakers like this. There's still a lot of football and a lot that can happen throughout the season with momentum and the way teams play, but this is an important one. It's one of those Thursday games that the league loves so much. They're tough, obviously tough on the bodies, but we're looking forward to the challenge and look forward to the 3 days off afterwards.
Aaron Rodgers always throwing shade, isn't he?
You know why he said that,
he's
though, right?
Always throwing shade. Because they're playing on Thursday night and it's a short week.
Well, no, because both receivers, they said if it was a Sunday game, would be eligible. That's exactly where it came from. Because the, it's different circumstances, too, because Adams is vaccinated, but he has to have the two tests within 24 hours. They didn't think they could administer the first one and have the 24 hours in time to get the second one in. He's already been ruled out. Neither one of them traveled. Alan Lazard is not vaccinated. So the only difference is Adams is getting paid. Lazard isn't for this game. But they were saying that Lazard, because it was contact tracing more than anything else, they thought that if he had another day or two, he would have been eligible by a Sunday game. And that's why they're kind of bitching and moaning about that.
Kansas City's not off to a great start, not living to the expectations that we all thought that they would. A couple of different publications talking about how the league has figured out Pat Mahomes, and really the gist of the conversation from both of these articles is that defenses now against Kansas City dropping more in coverage. They're rushing only 4. They're not worried about really blitzing Pat Mahomes. They're worried what he can do against the blitz. Two high safeties limiting their explosive plays, basically trying to get Kansas City to nickel and dime you down the field and then hope Pat Mahomes makes mistakes, which he has been making mistakes this season. Look, I understand that Kansas City isn't playing great. They still have a top 5 offense in the NFL. Like, if you look at the DVOA, which is the advanced offensive numbers, they're still top 5 in the NFL. So I get that maybe they're not playing this high-octane offense that we expected them to play. Their win-loss record, which also comes into play with how defenses are going to play you. I mean, if you're beating Kansas City by 2-3 possessions, of course you're going to drop everybody in coverage and rush 4. So the game script's kind of forcing these defenses to play this way anyways. Like, the fact that all of a sudden the NFL has figured out Kansas City and has figured out Pat Mahomes, I'm not buying that at all.
No, and I think, Jeremy, the bigger issue when you look at Kansas City is, as it relates to offense, is the fact that the offensive line hasn't lived up to billing, right? They retooled their entire offensive line to make it better to protect Pat Mahomes. They haven't been able to do that. So consequently, because the offensive line has been letting a lot of guys put pressure on Pat Mahomes, he still has the mentality of being a superhero. I can out-scramble most anyone. I can out-throw most anyone. And I can be the hero that Kansas City needs. And he hasn't been able to do that, because he's looking away from checkdowns that can get him out of pressure situations. Just keep the chains moving. Keep the ball moving. A 2nd and 4 versus a 2nd and 10 or 12 or 14 if he gets caught behind the line of scrimmage. That Pat Mahomes has got to be better in terms of his mentality. That's it. We know he's talented. We know he's got everything that he needs to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. The problem is, because of the subpar offensive line, because of the pressure that's being put on him, both media-wise and from the perspective of the team not winning games, but also from the actual defensive lineman coming at him, he's been trying to do way too much. He has the resources around him. He has to make better utilization of them. They have had no running game either. And ever since Edwards-Helaire fumbled in 2 consecutive games, including one that cost them a win or a chance at a win, he hasn't been the same. They don't have the kind of depth that they've had at the running back position. So it's twofold. It's the line as it relates to then how Mahomes reacts to it, and then it's the fact that they don't have a running game. They can fix a lot of this because there's still a lot of talent on that team, but they're putting themselves behind the eight ball in a lot of ways.
Offensively, those are their biggest problems. As a team collectively, their biggest problem is their defense, and that's why the offense, in my opinion, feels like they still need to search for their explosive plays instead of just taking what the defense is giving you. We'll see what Kansas City can put together after not playing up to expectations to start the season. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's take a look in hindsight, in retrospect. Jose Urquidy in Game 2, Luis Garcia Game 3 might just work after all. That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the best Italian food I have tasted in quite a while. It's Frankie's Italian Kitchen. I'm telling you, I've tried just about everything on the menu, and there's nothing that you can go wrong with at Frankie's. The good thing about it, too, is it's a family-friendly environment. You feel comfortable. You can spread out. You don't have to dress up. It's not foo-foo. It's not stuffy. The owner, Chris Smith, is also the chef, and he prides himself on just making top-quality food that is the freshest of fresh, with all the ingredients fresh, all the meals tasty, all of the meals also filling to where you get enough. You leave full, and so does your wallet, because you're not going to get caught, charged too much either, because the prices are affordable. It's just a great concept and environment. And look, some of you might have to drive a little bit, but it's worth it. A lot of you have asked recently, what's the Italian place I'm talking about? When you go, you come back and say, oh my God, was that food great? For the West Katy, Fulshear, Richmond, Sugarland area, it's easy peasy for you, and you're going to love it and go there often. If you're not from that area but you want to try it, it's worth the drive and it's worth the effort, because the food is top-notch. From the wings and the pizza, which they've always been known for, to all the other Italian dishes, from beef stroganoff and lasagna, to the specials weekly, which is why Chris, the owner, suggests you go to frankiesitaliankitchentx.com before you either show up or you want to order for takeout, because you'll find out there's going to be some things that aren't on the menu as regular items that are specials that only last as long as the ingredients do. But if you can get your hands on them, boy, are they delicious. frankiesitaliankitchentx.com. Tell them I sent you by. I believe that you will believe, like I do, the best Italian food in the area. frankiesitaliankitchentx.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Oh, that just fires me up. Let's give away some tickets to go see the Houston Cougars and the SMU Mustangs play some football on Saturday night at TDECU Stadium. Houston Cougars, 6-1, top team in the American Conference, playing host to the 7-0 SMU Mustangs, the 19th-ranked team in the country. Big I-45 rivalry, conference championship implications. Need all the Cougs to come out to TDECU Stadium to support the Cougars. Come early for all the fun and pageantry of college football. Halloween theme this weekend. The kids can come trick-or-treat, tailgate style. Start in the new expanded kid zone. Performances by the Spirit of Houston Band and the SMU Band. Entertainment by cheerleaders, Cougar Dolls, Shasta and Sasha, and DJ Me mixing it up in the student section. Let's give caller number 11 at 713-780-3776 tickets to see the Houston Cougars and the SMU Mustangs on Saturday. 713-780-3776. A $10 flash sale going on right now, by the way. Head on over to uhcougars.com/tickets. Give them a call, 713-GO-COUGS. General admission tickets through the flash sale, just $10 to see a heck of a game Saturday evening between the Houston Cougars and the SMU Mustangs. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Jose Urquidy got the start yesterday. Game 2 was fabulous. I mean, he was exactly what you wanted him to be. He gave up 2 runs, 5 innings, didn't walk a soul, struck out 7. Luis Garcia will be starting tomorrow in Game 3. We weren't really supportive of that move. We both wanted Luis Garcia to go in Game 2, Jose Urquidy in Game 3, if that was the direction you wanted to go in. In hindsight, in retrospect, and look, we like to jump out ahead of the result because it's really easy and lazy, in my opinion, to get the 2 cents in after the fact and play the hindsight game, the retrospect game. But you also have to give credit where credit's due. The Astros won yesterday 7-2 in convincing fashion. Urquidy did his thing, and now you have a good pitcher on the mound for Game 3 against Ian Anderson of the Atlanta Braves. In retrospect, in hindsight, still not a decision I necessarily agree with, but it has a chance of working out after all for the Astros.
Absolutely, and I think that part of it plays into it is the Charlie Morton injury as well, which you weren't expecting. Mm-hmm. If that Charlie Morton injury doesn't happen, then maybe there's a lot of different thought that goes into a lot of things in terms of was it the right move or not. But so far, it's worked right, and that's what we've always done. We did that at the start of the show. Look, the same way revisionist history doesn't work when all these people are saying, you know, once Siri did something good, how about that? See, you were wrong and I was right. Siri should be the guy. And then they forget to look at the next 3 at-bats where he struck out and looked absolutely ridiculous. The same thing with this. Dusty pressed the right button. It worked. He's pushed all the right buttons with the bullpen in the playoffs. They've worked. So you give credit where credit's due and you tip your hat. But what we are paid to do is give our opinions and then openly discuss them. And I still believe that Garcia was the man that was supposed to get the ball last night. Now, it puts him in a position of strength because of what I said with the Morton injury and the fact that it worked out with Urquidy. Now you got a guy whose last start was very, very good, and you hope that he has the ability to do that again, at least mirror a lot of that. You're not saying that you're going to ever replicate that kind of a performance, but you hope that he can do what Urquidy did, keep you in the game, limit it to a run or two over five innings. You take that in a heartbeat, wouldn't you, in Atlanta? Because Ian Anderson's no slouch of a pitcher. He's a good pitcher. So you need a good pitcher to go against him. You should have a good pitcher going against him in Garcia.
I would take that. And part of the reason, too, that we were pretty strong about Luis Garcia pitching at home was the fact of his home-road splits. He's a far better pitcher at home this season than on the road. At home, when you look at the numbers for Luis Garcia, the 2.39 ERA when he's pitching at home. 4.24 ERA when he's pitching away from home. So that was part of the variable of the equation of why we wanted Luis Garcia in Game 2, not Game 3. So that has to be something you're looking for in Game 3 as well. How does Luis Garcia pitch on the road in Atlanta? And you're right, Ian Anderson, really good numbers this season. 9-5 record, 3.58 ERA. This is rookie season. Did pitch a little bit last year with Atlanta, but didn't have enough innings to qualify. Had a sub-2 ERA last year. So he's been very impressive, former first-rounder. For the Atlanta Braves. Should be a good pitching matchup tomorrow. It's the Astros and the Braves. 1-1 in the World Series. Game 3 tomorrow night in Atlanta right here on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
And I said the other intangible was you wanted to put him in the most comfortable environment where he has memories of what he has just most recently done. His last start, which was his best start maybe all year, maybe of his career, was at home. That's yep. What that was one of the main things, too, I was banging the drum on, why you'd want to put him in that environment again. Some of you believe that he's going to be this newfound stick offensively, and that when he was in the batting cages the other night is because he hit so well that they need him to be like a Grinky, and he's going to come in and he's going to be the guy they need. You don't need any help offensively, right? The guys that you have the capabilities of snapping out whatever they're in. If they're not hitting it, the other guys are hitting it. That's the least of their worries. Their worries are getting guys that get people out from the mound consistently for multiple innings. If Garcia and Urquidy can both be those guys no matter when they pitch, so be it. The other thing we said is the quicker you get Garcia on the mound the first time, if he pitches well, the more possibilities present themselves that you can bring him back quicker too, have him play a bigger part in the back end of this series by getting him back out onto the mound. If you need him, yeah, you rush him back. If not, he's ready for the biggest games of the year at the end of the series.
Yeah, if he would have pitched Game 2, he would have went Game 6 on full rest. Pitching Game 3, he would start Game 7 if you go with the normal rest. Another thing, too, is the rust versus rest, right? Yeah, he's getting more rest. Does more rest lead to more rust? Because now he'll be pitching on a 7th day instead of a 5th day because he didn't pitch Game 2. That's the extra day. But now they're traveling as well today, so that's the extra day as well. The Astros, an optional workout today at Truist Park in Atlanta. Justin Verlander was tweeting a little bit earlier. He posted a video hugging his daughter, talked about how he had a great throwing session today. Said, if you told me 18 months ago I would be able to feel this good again and that wouldn't even be the highlight of my day, I would have called you crazy. He mentioned the highlight was hugging his daughter. But long story short, he said he feels very good. Posted a video of him hugging his daughter. Roosh, who has a blue check mark, is a Houston guy.
Oh, people know him. Don't worry.
Yeah, and more of a Rocket guy, but a Houston sports fan.
Most of them.
Houston Twitter knows who he is. He responded to this Verlander tweet and said, Justin, Houston forever loves you for the awesome job you've done in an Astros uniform and for helping us to our first World Series title. But man, we'd love to see you attend these World Series games in some capacity because you've meant so much to this team. Cheer the guys on. Tweet about them. Verlander responded to this, said, I would love to be there, but I have rehab every damn day. I would have to monopolize the trainers for hours, the bullpen coach and catcher for an hour, and strength coaches for an hour each day. I'm sure they don't have to help any players who are actually playing. He said, as for tweeting, I find myself wanting to say something all the time, but it sucks when people just want to talk S-word. Not worth it. Easier for me to just cheer them on without tweeting. A lot of people making a big deal about this Justin Verlander communication on Twitter.
I don't care about the communication today. What I care about is when the Astros made a statement, and it was clearly a statement when he was supposed to throw out the first pitch with Mattress Mack, that he hasn't been around all year. He shouldn't be around now. We don't need him. I supported the team 100% then, and we gave you the reasons why. There's plenty of guys that look at Lance McCullers right now. Lance McCullers is out with an injury, but he's there supporting his team. But the bigger one that I said was Glasnow of the Rays. Glasnow needed Tommy John surgery. He's out for the whole year. He never misses a game. He's in the dugout every day. He's supporting his team in every way possible, whether it be coaching him up or just rooting him on and pulling a Siri. He's there. Justin has not. And yet Justin, and you could say stealing money or whatever, it's unfortunate he had an injury, but Justin's getting paid 30-some million dollars this year, and he's staying away by choice. I got an issue with that.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting ready for free agency, obviously. This is the last year of his two-year deal. In hindsight, you never gave him that deal because he ended up just pitching one game on that contract. The Astros expected to give him the qualifying offer at the end of the season. He's not expected to accept that qualifying offer, so now you're looking at draft pick compensation. Although, who knows what's going to happen with Major League Baseball. The CBA expires in December, and there's talks that there's going to be some drastic changes in the game and that there's going to be a work stoppage in the offseason, too, which kind of plays into the equation of Carlos Correa a little bit. I mean, you get a work stoppage, nobody can sign free agents. I wonder what that means for the free agent class.
Yeah, a lot of things are going to change. And look, we also said this is the reason why I think that the designated hitters' days are numbered, and that after this playoffs, you're never going to see the designated hitter again. And that part of, like you talked about, the fact that it, even as it relates to finances, contracts, and more opportunities for more guys to make money by being a DH in the National League, the Players Association, I don't think, is going to have any pushback. Baseball might want to keep that whole purist mentality of, you know, keep the National League the way it's always been. And it's, you know, but guess what? It's a different day and time, and times change. And right now it looks like both leagues should be even, and in even doing everything the same way, you should be, especially with interleague play and all the other things. Both sides deserve to have the designated hitter. No one wants to see pitchers flailing at all kinds of pitches just so that the 3% or less that can actually put bat to baseball get a chance to show that they can hit. We don't need that.
I was listening to the pregame on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, whenever I went to grab dinner, and they were talking about how there's going to be some radical changes in ideas, and they also want starting pitchers to start to go deeper into games. They were talking about attaching the designated hitter with the starting pitcher, that the DH stays in the game as long as the starting pitcher stays in the game. And then once the starting pitcher is removed for the game, then the DH comes out of the game as well. That's something that I would hate. I do not want that at all. Very gimmicky. They're also really worried about pace of play in baseball.
You love gimmicks.
As well. No, I don't.
You're big on the guy on second base to start the extra innings.
I know you're being sarcastic, but I don't want anybody to believe I like gimmicks. I hate gimmicks. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Is this Deshaun Watson rumors kind of quieting down? Is it eerie? Is it eerie? Why is it so quiet? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!